Let's start again. We're going to now try screen sharing. I hope that wasn't what caused the problem. Okay. So, as I say, we have a pasuk in the Torah. Lo tikalel cheresh v'lifnei ve lo titei mikshol. You mustn't curse a deaf person, and you mustn't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Obviously, it means like the pshat, it means like the straightforward meaning of the pasuk, that if you see a blind person, you're not allowed to trip them up. However, Chazal tell us that there's another implication, another meaning to it as well. Why is there another meaning to it? Because the pasuk says, V'yareta me'elohecha, that you should fear your God. So I don't need a pasuk to tell me that you should fear your God when it's telling me not to trip up somebody else. Obviously, I shouldn't trip somebody else. Needs to be something where there's a matter of fearing God involved. Let's look at what the Sefer HaChinuch says. The Sefer HaChinuch explains where we get this from. Lo lahachshil b'nei Yisrael latet lahem eitz ra'ah. So what it also means when it says lo titein mikshol, lifnei ve lo titein mikshol, it means you mustn't cause b'nei Yisrael to stumble by giving them bad advice. Aval niyasher otam k'she yishalu eitzah. But we should put them in the correct direction when they ask us for advice. With whatever we think is the best way to advise them. Shene'emar, as the pasuk says, v'lifnei'iver lo titein mikshol. You shouldn't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Now, if it's talking about eitzah, if it's talking about giving people advice, then we understand why it says v'yareitam elokecha. Because a person can ask me a question, I can give them advice, and they can say, hold on, that was bad advice that you gave me. I can say, oh, well, I didn't realize it was bad advice. Okay, v'yareitam elokecha, so I have to fear Hashem. If I didn't believe it was good advice, I mustn't give it, because Hashem will know if I'm going to, if I'm giving bad advice. So we've got this notion that halachically it's prohibited to give a person bad advice. An example given, which the Sefer HaChinuch brings, is right at the end, V'amru zichronam livracha, al yomar adam l'chaveiro, mechor sadcha v'kach chamor. Don't tell a person, you know, why don't you sell your field to buy a donkey? And the only reason you're advising the person to do that is because you want to buy the field from them, and not because it's in their best interest to sell the donkey. Now, we're going to see that this principle of lifnei iver applies also with regard to mitzvot. If we look in the third source, which is the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Ayin Hei Amud Bet, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol mi sheish lo ma'ot, u'malveh otan shelo ba'edim. If a person has money and lends them to somebody else, not lends that money to somebody else, not in the presence of Aidin, Over mishum v'lifnei iver lo titein mikshol, is transgressing the prohibition of not putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. How are they transgressing that prohibition? Because if I lend somebody money and there are no witnesses to it, so then that person might well deny that they ever borrowed the money and say, I don't owe you £10. I never borrowed money from you. So I'm putting a stumbling block in front of them. I'm giving them an opportunity to do an avera. I'm giving them an opportunity to sin, and that is something which I'm not allowed to do. Similarly, we see a Gemara in Masechet Moed Katan, where we have a case where Da'amta Devei Rebbe Chazite Lehu Gavra Dahava Mache Livno Gadol. The maidservant in Rebbe's household, she saw a person who was striking his adult son. Amra, she said to him, Lehave Hahu Gavra B'Shamta. That person should be put into excommunicated. The Ka'avar Mishum V'Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol. They're transgressing the prohibition of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol, the prohibition of not putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. D'Tanya, because we've got a brighter. V'Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol. You mustn't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. What does that mean? The pasuk is referring to a person who smites their adult son. Why is that an example of lifnei iver. Why is it putting a stumbling block in front of them? Because if a parent smites their hits their adult son, what's the adult son likely to do in return? Likely to strike back, or at least likely to hate their parent, something like that. So therefore, you're putting a stumbling block in front of them. So we're seeing that if you do something which is going to cause another person to transgress a mitzvah, there is a prohibition, not just that person transgressing the mitzvah, there's a prohibition against, on you for putting them into that situation. Now, there's a very important Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Vav Amud Bet, which says as follows. Minayin shelo yashit adam kos shel yayin lenazir. How do we know that a person mustn't pass a glass of wine to a Nazirite? Remember, a Nazir is a person who's taken a vow that they're not going to drink wine. Ve'evem in hachai livnei noach. Or even to a Gentile, if it was evem in hachai, a limb torn from a living animal. A Gentile is not allowed to eat evem in hachai. It's not allowed to eat something torn from a living animal. Talmud Lama, we've got the Pasuk that we've been talking about. V'lifnei iver lo titein michshol. You're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Meaning, if I'm standing next to a Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. If I pass him a glass of wine to drink, then he transgresses when he drinks the wine, and I transgress when I pass him the glass of wine, because I'm enabling him, facilitating him, to do a transgression. So we say, hold on a minute, v'hacha d'chi lo yavinan le shakle ihu. So we say, well, hold on a minute. If I don't pass him the glass of wine, so he can just reach it and take it himself. So why should I be transgressing the prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol? I'm standing at a bar, as I often do. They tend to be bar mitzvahs, the type that I stand at. But I'm standing at a bar, and there's a Nazir standing next to me. And I take a glass of wine and pass it to him. Why should I be transgressing lifnei iver? He could just stretch in front of me and take it himself. So the Gemara answers, you know what, you're right. Hacha b'mayaskinan, what are we dealing with here? Dekai betray avrei nara, that we're standing on different sides of a river. Okay, so he can't reach the wine without me passing it to him. Daikanami, and we can also see that clearly from the text in the Gemara. Because we said, diktane lo yoshit. You mustn't, yoshit means sort of to stretch out. But look at tani lo yite. We didn't say, just means that you mustn't give it. Shmamina, so we can infer from that. So what we're seeing is, the prohibition of lifnei iver only applies if the person wouldn't be able to transgress without your assistance. Meaning, you've got a Nazir on one side of the river. I'm on the other side of the river with a glass of wine. Unless I pass him the glass of wine, he can't access it. And therefore, if I pass it to him, I'm facilitating his aveira, his transgression. But if he's standing next to me, or he's on the other side of the river, but he's also got a glass of wine. So in that case, if I pass him another glass of wine, then I'm not facilitating any aveira. He was perfectly capable of doing that aveira without my assistance. So, let's try and think a little bit about our case of inviting a guest on Shabbat. Simplest case would be that I've got somebody I want to invite, and let's say they are a housebound person, or they're a person they don't drive, and they live 10 miles away. So I know that the only way they're going to be able to come to me is by ordering a taxi and coming in the taxi. That's the only way they can come to me. And they weren't going to, no reason to assume, they very rarely go out. So there's no reason to assume they're going to go out in a taxi in any event. In that case, if I were to invite them to come to my house on Shabbat, that would seem to be a prohibition of lifnei iver, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. and it would seem to be prohibited for me to do that. But in many cases, it's not as straightforward as that, because in many cases, in actual fact, they've got a car sitting in their driveway, and they could go to any number of places on Shabbat. So I'm not particularly facilitating this Aveira. They might well have done an Aveira in any event. So my question is there a problem here of Lifnei Iver? And it would seem, from a straightforward understanding and reading of this Gemara, that there shouldn't be a problem of Lifnei Iver, because the person can access the Aveira themselves. And the truth is, this question comes up in many areas of Halacha. I was speaking recently, I mean, this is I was speaking recently to somebody who's a barber, a from fellow who's a barber, and I asked him, what does he do if a person comes in, Jewish person comes in, and say they want their head totally shaved, so they won't have any sideburns whatsoever of any length, what would he do? So it's prohibited, in actual fact it's prohibited for him to give such a haircut. It's also prohibited for the person to have such a haircut. That would be a case of Lifnei Iver. The Shulchan Aruch talks about the case of serving food to a person that you know is not going to say a bracha. Is that a case of Lifnei Iver? It might depend as to whether or not that person can easily access food themselves. Another question which comes up very often, comes up every year, discussion about the kosher restaurants being the fleishik restaurants being open during the 9 days. Person goes in to order a chicken schnitzel. Are you allowed to give it to them, or do you have to tell them they have to go for the bean burger, right? Because they can't eat meat during the 9 days. If I give it to them, is there a problem there of Lifnei Iver? Well, it would seem there probably isn't, because there are plenty of other places they could go and buy fleishiks from. So they can go down the road to Kosher Deli and buy fleishiks. Kosher Deli is allowed to sell fleishiks to people, assumes that they're taking it home for Shabbat. They can go and buy it and eat it there and then. So it would seem there's not going to be a problem with Lifnei Iver there. However, if we look in the Ran, and indeed in other commentaries as well, we'll see there is nevertheless an issue of Lifnei Iver, even in a case where a person is could access the Aveira themselves. The Ran says, Mashmet Hani Milil Inyan Isura Doraita, where we said that if the two people are on the same side of the river, there's no problem of Lifnei Iver, that's only as far as the Doraita is concerned. Avar Mikol Makom, but nevertheless, Midurabanan Miha Asur, nevertheless, Durabanan, it's prohibited to give the person the glass of wine, even if he's standing next to you at the bar. Why? Shahare mechuyav hu lahafrisho me'isur. I've got an obligation that if I see a person transgressing, I've got an obligation to try and stop them transgressing. I see a person about to eat a piece of treif, I've got an obligation to tell them that this food is treif and they're not supposed to eat it. So if I've got an obligation to stop a person doing something which is prohibited, how could I possibly assist somebody doing an Aveira, even if it wasn't prohibited mid-oraita? That's the question that we've got. So the Ran is saying there is a prohibition mid-rabanan of Lifnei Iver, even in a case where the person could access the prohibited thing themselves. Now, there's actually a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether or not there is a prohibition to Rabbanan of Lifnei Iver. It's very interesting that it's not mentioned it's not mentioned explicitly in the Gemara. Usually, where you've got something which is an Issa to Rabbanan, it's mentioned explicitly in the Gemara. This is not mentioned explicitly in the Gemara, which would seem to suggest to us that no such prohibition exists. But in actual fact, as I say, it's a point of machloket, and there are those who say that it does exist. So we've got a machloket, whether there's a prohibition mid-rabbanan of Lifnei Iver. If we look in the Rama, in Shulchan Aruch Yoradeh, Simen Kufnun Aleph Seif Aleph, Here he's talking about whether or not you're allowed to provide paraphernalia of Avodah Zarah to Gentiles. Let's say you make your clothing, you're in the clothing business, the shmata trade, as they call it, and you're a tailor, and a priest comes to you, a Gentile priest comes to you, and wants you to make a set of robes for him to officiate in church or in his temple, whatever it is. Are you allowed to do that or not? So look at what the Rama says. The Rama says, Yeshomrim hada asulim kaolahem dvarim hashayachim la'avodatam. Obviously, you're not allowed to sell a Gentile things that they're going to use for worship of Avodah Zarah, because Gentiles are not allowed to be idolaters. Hainu davkem ein lahem achirim kayotsebo. That only applies if they haven't got these things themselves. Or shelo yuchlu liknot b'makom acher. Or they can't access it somewhere else. Aval im yucholim liknot b'makom acher. If they can access it some other way, mutar limkol lahem kol davar. Then you can sell anything that you want to them, because there's no issue of lifnei iver, because they can access the prohibition already themselves. V'yesh machmirin. But there are those who are strict and say that you can't do that. Why can't you do that? Because of lifnei iver derabanan. Because even though from the Torah there's no prohibition of lifnei iver, nevertheless, midrabanan there is. Midrabanan, you're not allowed to facilitate an aveira, even if it, or assist with an aveira, even if it could have been done without your assistance. So if this was a long lomdisher shir, we discuss all the different ways of understanding the Rama. But certainly the most straightforward way of understanding the Rama, which is the way quite a number of authorities understand it, is that we're talking here about that we've got a machloket, whether there's a rabbinic prohibition of lifnei iver or not. V'nagu lahakel kisvara harishona. So the Rama says the minhag is to be makel, is to be lenient, like the first opinion. V'chol bal nefesh yachmir la'atzmo. But a person who's a bal nefesh, and we could again have a whole discussion on what's the definition of a bal nefesh, but we'll say it's a person who is punctilious in their observance of the mitzvot. Person who's a bal nefesh yachmir la'atzmo will be strict for themselves, but not necessarily for other people. So the Rama seems to be saying that where a person can access an aveira themselves without assistance, so then there's no prohibition to Rabbanan of lifnei iver. But in actual fact, that's a, as I say, it's a machloket in the Rishonim, and it's also a machloket in the Acharonim as well. So now let's think about our case of inviting somebody for a Shabbat meal, and you know that they're going to travel. So case number one is, okay, you're inviting somebody, you live in Hendon, and you're inviting somebody from Edgware for a Shabbat meal. Right? Now, they've got a car, they're not observant, so they might go out for a drive in any event. So you're not facilitating their aveira. It's not like they don't drive on Shabbat unless they're invited out for a meal. If they don't drive on Shabbat unless they're invited out for a meal, then you'd have a problem. But if they drive anyhow on Shabbat, then maybe you wouldn't have a problem, because you're not particularly facilitating their aveira. They could do that aveira in any event, and we've got, this is something which worst would be a prohibition midrabanan. From the Rama it seems nagu lahakel kisvara harishona, that we could be lenient. Others would say, no, we're not lenient. In actual fact, we follow the view that there is a prohibition midrabanan of issuing such an invitation. Now, what I want to do now is to look at some of the discussions of the contemporary poskim who address this question, and see what they say. And I really want to take two ways of looking at it. I want to start off with the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is in Igrot Moshe Chelek Aleph, Simon Sadik Tet, written I think in the early 1950s, if I remember correctly. And he talks about the question, not about inviting people to your home on Shabbat, but even can you invite people to come to shul on Shabbat when you know they're going to come in what he calls machines. Presumably he means cars there. If you look on the second line there, he says people are going to come b'nesiaba machines. Now this is a very, very important question because many shuls are doing outreach and promoting activities and prayer services and the like, knowing that people are going to come by car. Can you promote that? We're not talking about a case. Obviously, you could have a shul open, and you know, people are welcome to come, people are welcome not to come, etc., etc. But to particularly, you're the rabbi of a shul, you know, to particularly phone up people you haven't seen for a while, you know they live 3 miles away. They're not going to walk. Can you invite them to come to shul? So Rav Moshe said, "V'ishavti de'lahazminet harachokim ba'ofen she'i'efshar she'avol b'lochil Shabbat v'adai asur." He says, as far as inviting people who live so far away, they're obviously going to come by being mechalel Shabbat, v'adai asur, it's definitely prohibited. He says, in actual fact, it's worse than the prohibition of lifnei iver. Sharu od beisur meisit. In this case, you're inciting a person to do something wrong. You know, lifnei iver is just sort of I'm placing the something prohibited in front of them. But here, I'm encouraging them to do something which is wrong, and that he says is definitely a problem. And he goes on to say, so I might have thought, you know what, person who lives 2 miles away, you know, okay, they might come by car, but they could walk. You know, I'm not forcing them to come by car. If they live 10 miles away, so then definitely they wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be able to invite them to come. But if they live 2 miles away, then even if I know they'll probably come by car, they don't need to come by car. I'm not really putting a stumbling block in front of them. They've got every opportunity to walk. However, he says, "V'isur lifnei iver yesh af ba'inam rechokim kol kach." He says it applies even to people who don't live so far away. K'sheyadua sheitatzlu leilech baraglayim v'yisu b'machines. When you know that they're going to be lazy and not walk but to travel, aval isur meisit lecha ba'inam rechokim. There, you're not inciting them to do an aveira. But he says it's still prohibited. It's still prohibited to invite them to come and to encourage them to come, because even though they don't have to do the Aveira, nevertheless, you know that they're going to do an Aveira, and therefore it's prohibited. So therefore, Rav Moshe says, you know, even in terms of inviting a person to come to shul, if you know they're not going to to walk, is prohibited. Kal vachomer in terms of inviting them for a Shabbat meal. He's got another tshuva elsewhere where he talks about, you know, shuls which give out raffle tickets or vouchers, tokens, whatever, to kids who come to shul on Shabbat to encourage them to come. Rav Moshe was very much against that. He felt it was better they shouldn't come to shul. Don't invite them to come to shul because you're encouraging them to do an aveira. He says, "V'im einam b'lashon hazmana." If, however, you're not actually inviting them, elastam hoda'a she'osim minyan, but you're just letting people know that there's a service going on. V'notzim prasim l'habayim l'palel, and you give out vouchers or whatever to people who are coming. Shakavana be'etzem hu ratlik krovim, and you know, really, you're trying to get the local people to come. You know they're going to people who live further away. They're going to come by car. There doesn't seem to be a problem of meisit. Whether it's prohibited, midrabanan, lifnei iver, he's not sure. And he says, You only get a token if you've shown up, if you've walked. That's if you've got your car keys in the pocket, you don't get the token in the children's service. The interesting thing to try in some shuls, you know, you can only come to the Kiddush if you walked. If you didn't walk, you can't come into the Kiddush. So Rav Moshe's tshuva here is very interesting. He's taken a very strict line with Lifnei Iver. He said even in a case where you know that the where it's perfectly possible that the person won't transgress, if you know that they will, then you can't encourage them to be involved in an activity which will lead to them transgressing. Even to the degree, Rav Moshe said, you know, the person won't come to shul on Shabbat, which certainly from our contemporary experience is something which I would suggest is not looking at a wider picture. I'm obviously being careful how I'm responding to Rav Moshe's tshuva. Maybe Rav Moshe was concerned about people, you know, not coming to shul. I'm sure he was, you know, in general. But he seemed to feel that it was a better situation that people should remain not coming to shul on Shabbat than coming to shul ba'aveira. Now, I remember in actual fact, and Rav Moshe doesn't quite address this case, but I remember when I was applying for my first rabbinical positions, in those days, the question that sometimes came up, I was actually never asked it, but, you know, I remember talking with people about, you know, possible questions that would come up in interviews, especially, you know, the first positions that I was looking at were small communities, you know, outside of, you know, the major Jewish centres. You know, what if you ask, is it better that a person drives to shul on Shabbat or stays at home and doesn't come to shul? So I said, that's never the question. That's never the question. The question really always is it better that a person drives to shul on Shabbat or drives to Brent Cross on Shabbat? In terms of, we're not usually asked the question, you know, whether I should, you know, stay at home and keep Shabbat or come to shul and break Shabbat. Unfortunately, we don't live in a world like that. You know, it's now people who are driving on Shabbat, if they're not coming to shul, they're going to be going elsewhere. There might be some rare exceptions, but in general, that's the situation. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Minchat Shlomo, Simon Lamed Hei, he has a related question. And he says, are you allowed to offer refreshments to somebody who's, you know, is not going to make a bracha on them? The specific case that he's talking about is yeshiva where some donors, non-from donors, are coming to visit the yeshiva. And they're not going to say a bracha on the food. But they're having a tour of the yeshiva. They're donors. If you don't offer them some refreshments, they're going to have quite a negative view of the yeshiva. They're going to think that you're very ungrateful. You take their money. You know, they're good enough to give you their money, but they're not good enough to receive your food. What sort of impression is that going to make? So Rav Shlomo Zalman says that in actual fact, we've got two considerations here to bear in mind. On the one hand, there's a prohibition again of Lifnei Iver, a prohibition against giving somebody food if they're not going to say a bracha over it. But there's also a prohibition against making people hate Judaism or hate Orthodox Judaism. And we've got to balance the two against each other. And he thinks that making people hate Orthodox Judaism is a much greater prohibition than giving them food, even though they're not going to be saying a bracha over it. Therefore, he says, you can give them food, even though they won't make the bracha. Now, the question is exactly how this can be applied to a Shabbat case. Firstly, you know, breaking Shabbat is a very serious prohibition. Secondly, of course, not everybody expects an invitation. There might be a difference, and I think there would be a significant difference, between a person who just wants to invite some friends round, some cousins, they haven't seen their cousins in ages, you know what, let's invite them round Friday night in the winter for dinner, and a case of somebody who's got a chozer b'tshuvah, whose parents don't keep Shabbat, her parents, you know, want to come round and spend time with their children and their grandchildren, and they're always irritated that, you know, we never get invited on a Friday night, you know, to come. And they're going to have a very negative attitude towards their frum children if they don't get an invitation. So it might be appropriate to make a certain distinction there. And it's along these lines that Rav Moshe Sternbach in Tshuvot Bahanagot takes a more permissive view than Rav Moshe Feinstein did. He's got exactly this question. Ben Baal Tshuva Mazmin Horav Lesudat Shalel Shabbat. So a Baal Tshuva who wants to invite his parents for a Shabbat meal knows that they're going to go home afterwards by car. So he says, the child, the person, the host, claims, this is a way of bringing his parents closer to authentic Judaism. But at the same time, he's causing chilul Shabbat. But on the other hand, they're going to be breaking Shabbat in any event. And he hopes that if they come to him for Shabbat meals sometimes, they'll grow closer to full observance. They might never reach full observance, but they'll certainly be doing more things which Orthodox Jews do. So he says in the next paragraph, Nireh, it would seem, Sheyesod ha'isod lifnei iver, hudumia di iver shemachshilo. Says the whole principle of this prohibition of lifnei iver is similar to a blind person where you trip them up. But if you're trying to help the person, then it's not regarded as tripping them up. He says it's like a doctor. A doctor might prescribe something or do some surgery on a person which causes a certain amount of pain, but ultimately it's for the person's good. So here also it might be causing the person to transgress now, but might have ultimately will benefit that person in terms of bringing them closer to religious observance, and therefore he thinks that there's grounds to be lenient, particularly you're not telling them they've got to drive, and certainly if there's an opportunity for them to stay over, you've always got a bed, if you want to stay over you'll be very welcome, even if you know that they won't, so then that would help in this regard. He says there could be an issue of Chilul Hashem, that people are seen bring their cars, and he says, you know, this needs to be dealt with discreetly. But he certainly thinks that one can look at a wider picture and what one's trying to achieve. So I would say there's, you know, definitely going to be a distinction between, person inviting people where there's going to be a possibility of encouraging their religious growth, and where it's just for a social reason. If you've got, you've got friends from abroad, friends from New York, they're in London, they phone you up and they say, hi, we're in London for a little bit, that'd be lovely to see you. And you say, oh, well, why don't you come to us Friday night for dinner? Say, well, we're going to the theatre early, but, you know, we'll come after the theatre. All right, so they're going to come at 10 o'clock Friday night. You know, it's just for you to sit and schmooze with them till midnight. They're not going to have kiddush. They're not going to have hamotzi. They're not coming to experience Shabbat. That wouldn't be grounds to be lenient. On the other hand, if it's people who are non-observant and you're inviting them davka on a Shabbat, not just because it's more convenient, but because you're going to give them an authentic Shabbat experience, and that's going to not, they might not leave afterwards saying, you know, once we park this car when we get home, we're never going to drive it again on Shabbat. That might not happen, but that they'll have a more positive attitude towards this. You know, we really should, we must look forward to coming next time. And next time they'll come, and you know, the time after they'll ask you, you know, do you have one of those tribe benches which has got, you know, the transliterated kiddush in it? You know, and they take that away with them. Then there you've gained from what's happening. And especially as there's not a Lifnei Ived or writer, at Rav Moshe Sternbach thinks there's mileage in it. And Rav Osher Weiss, we're running a little bit late now, so we'll sort of keep this brief, but Rav Osher Weiss in Minchat Asher Chelet Bet, Simon Kafchet, he makes similar observations. We'll just look at a little bit of inside, but he says, V'niresh ha'kol l'fi ha'inyan. It all depends on the circumstances. The mechad gisa asur lanu lahakel rosh b'kdushat ha'shabbat. ולהוג באופן שאלו שאינם שאנו באים לקרבם לחיי תורה ולקבלת מלכות שמיים יראו חלילה שאנו מזלזלים בקדושת השבת. We need to be careful that people don't think that we don't care about the sanctity of Shabbat. But on the other hand, הוא מאידך גיסא מצוי מאוד שזו האפשרות היחידה להשפיע עליהם. This is a rare, a special opportunity to have a positive impact on people. That's people who are able to come on Shabbat, and you know, sitting around a nice Shabbat table can be a very positive experience. So he says the correct thing to do is to try and encourage them to come in a way which will be Shabbat observant. But if they're not going to, so if your matara, part of your objective is that you're going to, that this should be a spiritually enriching opportunity, then it's going to be permissible. So this, you know, really would be the difference between inviting people for a Friday night meal or a Shabbat lunch, and just inviting them around for a couple of hours Shabbat afternoon to sit in the garden drinking pims. You know, that would be harder to justify. Obviously, if you're inviting them for Sudash Shlishit and you're going to sing Mizmor LeDavid three times, and you're going to have two types of herring, and make it very, very Hamish, and Birkat Hamazon and washing and everything, that might be different. But some to invite people round would be a problem. And he makes the observation. He quotes from the Netziv in his Shelot Shuvot Meshiv Davar. Disvara Pshutahi De'ein Isum Sayeb Chadavra Denara. He says the whole prohibition, even to Rabbanan, only applies kasher anu gomim ba'zem begom mikom makom dimatachet. If we're making this happen in a way that it wouldn't have happened otherwise. Dim anu lo nesayeb yadov nitan lo isur yitztarek litroch el hasigo b'makom acher b'yitakev hadavar. That's if we didn't do this, then it would be difficult for them to do the Aveira. Avar kasherim b'siyua shelanu shum zeros v'akdamat achet ein isu masayeya. But if we're not really making it easier for them, then there's no problem with masayeya. V'lichora nireh l'shitatot v'nidon didan ein isu masayeya. That he says, with non-from people, the whole issue of masayeya might not exist. D'min hastam hayu mechalin shabbat v'veitam b'chol sha'ah v'sha'ah. He says, in actual fact, if they were sitting at home, they'd probably be breaking Shabbat all the time. So, okay, this way they're going to break Shabbat by driving the car. That way they'll break Shabbat by turning on the kettle. What difference does it make? And he says, in actual fact, if you invite them to your house on Shabbat, then for the couple of hours they're at your house, they're going to be observing Shabbat. So as if they're at home, they'll put the kettle on and they'll turn the lights on and they'll do the crossword and they'll do some knitting if people still do knitting and do the gardening. And you know, they might be able to do 39 avot melachot in an hour and a half, with a certain amount of effort, I suppose. Whereas they come to you, they'll have done one aveira, they'll have driven, fine. Not fine, but an aveira, and the rest of the time they're at your house, they won't be doing any aveirot. Isn't that saving them from doing aveirot rather than facilitating aveirot? So what we see from Rav Osher Weiss is, again, that this is possibly not even an issur to Rabbanan, and possibly this is actually saving them from doing aveirot, combined with the fact that there's a gain to be had from this, that in actual fact it wouldn't be a problem. So the guidance, you know, each case needs to be assessed on its own merits, but the guidance that I usually give people is, you know, you've got to ask yourself, you know, what's your motivation, number one. Number two, is there any, you know, is there any way that the people could have got there without travelling? Meaning, you know, if you're inviting somebody from Ilford to Northwest London, you know, on Friday night, then, you know, there's no way they're going to walk. So it would need to be that, you know, the main purpose or the main benefit of this invitation is, you know, these are your non-frum relatives or your non-frum friends, you know, and one of the things that you do as part of your friendship is you know, give them a good, positive Shabbat experience, and they always love it. They always love coming to your house on a Shabbat and singing the Zmirot and benching, and, you know, they're always proud because their kids learn to bench at school and get a chance to do it at your house, you know, etc., etc., and you get them to bless their kids and whatever it is, you know, so that, you know, would be one thing. If it's not like that, then to, you know, have them travel from Ilford, you know, bishvil ma. On the other hand, there's a little bit more flexibility. You know, they live through, you know, they live half a mile away. So non-frum people, if it's raining, you know, drive on Shabbat if it's half a mile away. Frum people will walk 3 miles if it's raining on Shabbat. I mean, in that case, you know, the possibility of them driving is, you know, is much less. The possibility of them walking is higher. You know, again, if it's for a positive benefit, then there's something to be gained from it. You know, I certainly spent a couple of years as the rabbi of a small shul where, you know, I think the only people, a couple of people didn't walk. Sorry, a couple of people didn't drive, and that was only because they lived close enough that it was harder to find parking near the shul than it was to for them to walk. If we hadn't encouraged people to come, even though they were driving, there would have been no minyan. And not only would there have been no minyan, but I think their involvement with Jewish life would have been far less. And whilst on any one given Shabbat it doesn't make a lot of difference to a person's life whether they go to shul or not, but people who were, you know, religiously and Jewishly involved because they drove to shul every Shabbat, that had been taken away from them, then I think their long-term engagement with Orthodox Judaism would have been a lot less, and that would have had an impact on them and their families as well. So I think in those cases it's important to look for ways, you know, to encourage people's religious observance, you know, in the big picture rather than to limit it. So I see there's one raised hand here. We can take a question there. Tzipora, you've got a question. I think it's very hard to say, you know, there's nothing to be gained from it. I would like to hope that in, many cases, you know, this can awaken something, you know, in a person. Even though, okay, you know, we're not necessarily expecting them to, you know, refuse to drive home after that meal, and they might, you know, carry on, you know, that's, we don't know what the impact is of, you know, being exposed to, you know, something positive and something meaningful, you know, in that regard. I would suggest, you know, perhaps that, you know, in cases where it's less likely that a person's going to be positively impacted, you perhaps need to make more of an effort to positively impact them. Otherwise, it would be much harder to justify, you know, inviting them on a Shabbat. You know, so if it's just, you know, this, you know, tourist, you know, they want to pop in for 2 hours on a on Friday night at 10 o'clock at night, you know, we would need to think of a way that it is worth it, their religious identity is going to be different. You know, you want, that would have to be, you know, the best Friday night they've had in years. You know, sometimes you need to say that, no, you know, why should I have them, you know, why should I invite them? They can say they can only come on Shabbat. Why should I invite them on Shabbat? They're not going to, they'll break Shabbat with no possibility for gain. And so there'll be osa. But, you know, sometimes you'll have, say, you know, Chosei Teshuva might have elderly parents. You know, it's unlikely they're going to change their lifestyle at this stage. You know, they've never kept Shabbat till now. They're not going to keep Shabbat now. But I actually know of a case where somebody, you know, regularly had their non-observant parents for Shabbat, you know, for Friday night dinner. Their parents had never, it wasn't a family that made Kiddush at home, anything like that. And then one year when they were away on holiday and the parents had Friday night dinner at home, they started making Kiddush, you know, they had Kiddush regularly with their children. They weren't going to become Shomrei Shabbat. They started making Kiddush. You know, so that was, you know, a progression in their, you know, in their Jewish experience. You know, bringing a person closer to Hashem doesn't necessarily only mean that, you know, they become so frum that they won't use the Eruv. You know, there are, you know, other points along the continuum which one can aspire to as well. So, I think that's roughly Ad Kan for this evening. Next week, we've got a shiur on what counts as Chukat HaGoy. And thank you as ever for joining us learning Torah.